Broadcasting live from Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Cape Fear Seniors, where those who impact seniors' lives gather to tell their stories.
Welcome to Cape Fear Seniors. I'm Tom Petcher, your host. This week's guest is Jason Clam, Director of Community Outreach for the Lower Cape Fear Hospice and Life Care Center. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It seems to me that the word hospice can be a little daunting or can be remarkably comforting or just plain confusing, depending on the familiarity the person has with the word, the concept.
Sure.
Tell us what the word means to you who lives in the world of hospice.
Well, to me, and as you said, I live in the world of hospice and been working there for almost 13 years. And in that time, I've really come to see that it is all about caring and providing a comfort and support to not only patients, but also their family, their loved ones, in what could be one of the hardest times of their lives. And going, walking with them through that journey.
I use the word daunting. We'll just get right to it. Can it scare people, the concept of hospice? Because it means a certain
right.
End.
It means end of life care. And yes, it can be very scary. I do a lot of events out in the community, and one of the most common things people share with me is, I hope to never need you, or they don't really want to talk about what it is that I do. I call it also the drop the shoulder syndrome. I say I work for hospice and instantly their shoulders drop and they say, wow, that's, a really hard thing to do. But I think if you ask people who have experienced hospice, people who work in hospice, volunteer for hospice, I really think they look at it differently. They look at it as a special kind of caring.
And the more you learn, the more you probably would not say, I hope I never need you, because the fact of the matter is hospice is there because it really is the best way to experience end of life.
Exactly. End of life is going to be part of every life. I joke that they've done research and they've shown that it's about one out of every one of us is going to die. And if you can, accept that fact, then why not have it be the way you want it to be? For you and for your family.
It raises a specter of what very few of us really want to contend with, and that's our own mortality. But it's faced it square on. Fair statement?
That is a very fair statement. But on the other side of that, I have talked to a lot of people who say, I wouldn't ever want to live forever. And so, we all understand that is part of life. Just as birth is part of life, death is part of life. And hospice and palliative care is there as a legitimate form of health care during that time.
In some of my research prior to having you on the show today, I just kind of poked around a little bit, and I was frankly surprised to see how old of a concept it is. I mean, it goes way, way back into the 11th century, as I understand.
Well, certain forms of it, certainly. The current modern day form of hospice is actually newer than you probably. You might think back in the 1960s, where the current modern day philosophy came into being of providing that comfort, care, physically, but also emotionally, spiritually, all those kinds of things came into being less than 40 years ago.
The name Dame Cicely Saunders comes up as you do research. Talk about her.
Sure. She was in England and really wanted to provide an outlet for people at the end of life, that, a place where they could go that was different than all the rest of healthcare. And she really wanted to do something about pain at end of life and kind of started the whole idea of hospice. And one of her philosophies was, if you knew the end was coming, would your life change? Would your priorities change? Would there be different things important to you? And the obvious answer is yes. And so she wanted to be that. And to do that, you had to control their pain. And then you could work on all those other things that would be so important to people if they knew that time was short.
Is hospice relegated specifically to imminent end of life?
No, and that's one of the misconceptions about hospice. We typically talk about a 6-month prognosis or less, which, sometimes that happens and sometimes that doesn't. A lot of people do equate hospice with, the very end. And one of the things we hear from family members after serving them in hospice is, if we would have known this was what it was all about, we would have made this decision much sooner. And so one of our big points out in the community is, you know, I'd rather you learn about hospice and make the choice not to pick it right now, but because that's your choice. But if you didn't know that you could have had hospice sooner, then that's where our healthcare system isn't doing what it should.
Hospice care can happen either at home, which is where a lot of people prefer to experience end of life. I'm getting better and better at saying that phrase.
Sure, sure. You still paused a little bit, I saw. Right. But
Or you also have the Life Care Center. Talk about the two different approaches and who necessarily gets which approach and
sure.
what criteria used to evaluate.
Sure. First, just to mention that it is another, I call it a misconception, but you know, most people think of hospice as our facility.
Yes.
And which is very important, but we do serve, you know, a vast majority of our patients at home. And they've done this real research this time and asked people, you know, when facing that situation, where are you most comfortable? Where would you want to be? And home, you know, is overwhelmingly the answer. And so, yes, we do serve, you know, most of our patients at home. Now, we do have our facility here in Wilmington. We also have a facility in Brunswick County and one in Columbus County as well for people who need that extra care. So that could be that they are nearing the very end and they just need 24/7 help and support. It might be that they just need a little extra work on their pain management to make sure that they are comfortable. And we can also use our facility as a respite facility. So caregivers who need a break or need to go out of town, they can use a facility for their loved one to get the care while they need to be elsewhere.
Great services across the border. It's really pretty remarkable. You, as I understand it, rely a lot on volunteers. Can you talk about what roles they play?
Sure, we do. We have almost 600 people who volunteer for our organization. And, you know, the backbone of what they do is they provide that extra care, extra support, respite to patients at home, but also in our facilities. They fulfill a lot of administrative type duties, outreach, education, getting the word out there. We use volunteers in our offices to help with, you know, mailings and acknowledgments. We have really neat programs. We use pet therapy. We have volunteers who play music. We have volunteers who bake cakes because, you know, even hospice
cake therapy.
We call it cakes for all occasions. Cake therapy, exactly. You know, because patients and families still have the right to celebrate when there's a birthday or an anniversary
sure.
or something in their family. So we have lots of different ways for volunteers to plug in and you know, tens of thousands of hours every year given to our organization, our patients and families.
Hospitals are there and medicine in general is there to prolong life under most circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably a fair thing to say. There's a sort of you have a softer edge, if you will, and you're more nuanced, I think,
mm-hmm.
in hospice. You recognize that death is inevitable. As you say, one out of us experiences
right.
it. In our lifetime, so to speak. The word palliative is often used for
mm-hmm.
hospice. Talk a little bit about what palliative means and how it differs from the kind of care one might get in a hospital and when one chooses one over the other.
Well, and that's a great question because palliative care in and of itself is a very broad type of medicine, really focusing on comfort care and pain and symptom management versus aggressive treatment or extending life kind of thing. Now, you can have palliative care and not be in hospice. You know, you can, you know, just want to be comfortable
mm-hmm.
and not look at aggressively treating or curing an illness. So palliative care itself is a very broad term, and the field of palliative care is becoming larger and larger, you know, as our population gets older and we see a need for different types of palliative care or locations of palliative care and all those sorts of things. Hospice is one piece within that palliative care, typically during an end-of-life situation. So hospice practices palliative care, the comfort measures and symptom measures, but you can actually have that, you know, beyond just hospice care.
But you have physicians involved in hospice, obviously.
We do, and it's a wonderful thing that we are able to provide our patients and families, and that is trained medical professionals, you know, hospice and palliative care physicians who are, you know, kind of guiding the care that we're giving our patients and families in our facilities, but also on the home side as well.
At any given point, how many are in your parlance, are they clients or are they patients?
We call them patients and families.
Okay.
And we always link them together because that's, again, one of the philosophies of hospice is that they come in as a unit.
Right.
You know, that families oftentimes are in just as much need of support and caring as the patients themselves. So it is a unit.
So at any given time, how many, and I know it varies, how many, generally speaking, people are you dealing with at any given time?
Sure. We are normally, it's been the trend for several months now that we are serving approximately 500 patients and families in hospice care.
At any given moment.
At any given moment. Again, over six counties that we are serving
right. In
Southeast North Carolina. But then we also do serve people under our some other programs, palliative care, that are kind of like a pre-hospice kind of thing. So we also serve people in bereavement. So these are folks who have already experienced their death and the death of a loved one, and we provide them care and support, counseling. So at any given time, we're actually serving, you know, probably over 1,000 people, in different ways.
Always linking the family in with it as well.
Linking the family, correct.
And if a patient is getting hospice care at home, what kind of experience can he or she expect?
Sure. Well, the first, you know, obviously the key point there is at home. So, what a benefit to not have to leave your house and have your care come to you. I mentioned before that we focus on the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, and all those kinds of things. So we have a multidisciplinary team that is available to serve patients and families. You know, we have the physicians, we have nurses and nurse aides. We have clinical social workers to help through the psychosocial, the emotional kinds of things. We also have chaplains on staff to provide that end-of-life spiritual care. Mentioned volunteers are part of the team, and then the bereavement personnel. So those all together form a team that can care. Now, you know, some families will need more than others of different parts of that team, but they're all available to care for the patients and families.
And in many cases, a patient would interface with all of those.
They very well could. Okay. And in addition to that, we manage the durable medical equipment. We manage
the hospital beds, the
medications that are related to the diagnosis. And so it is kind of an all-encompassing kind of care.
And home health and home care is involved as well.
Right. And if there is need for other services, you know, we look outside and figure out what it is that really this patient and family needs.
You coordinate.
We help coordinate and make that happen.
Got it. Right. I understand, again, in doing some research, that you have a particular passion for a program at Lower Cape Fear Hospice and Life Care Center, which is called Begin the Conversation. And first of all, what is Begin the Conversation?
It is a public education initiative that encourages people to have these conversations about what their preferences, what their wishes, what their advanced care planning kinds of things could be. There's a lot of focus on legal and financial issues and making sure your things are in place for that. But equally important is what do you want healthcare-wise? And part of that is filling out any documents, you know, living wills, healthcare power of attorneys, those sorts of things. But it's also making sure your family knows what your wishes are, what's important to you as far as quality of life versus quantity of life. What's, you know, pain versus, you know, living in pain and not living in pain. Long-term care preference. There's just so many things. We've gotten into more of the organ, eye, and tissue donation decisions. And do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried? Do you want a memorial service? There are just so many things that can be discussed, can be decided, and can be shared so that, heaven forbid, that happens to you or a member of your family, it's in place. And it's so important for two reasons. One, that your wishes are followed and you can be assured, you know, that people know that, but it's also a special gift to the people that would have to make those decisions for you if you weren't able to. And to have, you know, that already done and in place and decided can be a powerful time where then families can concentrate on supporting each other and being there rather than having to make those difficult decisions.
It's got to be a hard conversation to have, though, in many cases.
Absolutely. It's easy to say the say you need to have these conversations and begin the conversation. It is absolutely a whole nother ballgame to actually go and do it.
Do you help facilitate the conversation?
We certainly can. We do workshops. We do consultations. People can let us know if they need some help. You know, obviously, when they come into hospice, you know, we definitely facilitate those conversations with family members. But we
ideally,
also,
this happens well before the need for hospice.
And you know, you like to try to encourage that because it's a whole lot easier for you to make, you know, objective and rational decisions to have these conversations before you're in that crisis. And so we do things like go to church groups and civic clubs and you know, encourage them to have those conversations and you know, take a piece of material home and just have a talk with your spouse or with your kids.
Or leave it on the kitchen table.
Yeah, and just kind of, yeah, as a hint and see what happens.
I'm going to get a little personally anecdotal here. My dad, who's left us, went out of his way, and he and my mom were divorced a while back. He went out of his way to set everything up and let us know.
Mm-hmm.
So when the time came and he died, everything was in place. My mother, who's still with us, she's 83, and living on her own.
Mm-hmm.
I had to really work just to get her to get a grab bar installed in the shower. She's
right.
Down in Florida.
Right.
And then when I started to approach the idea of her maybe moving in with my sister who lives down there. Boy, there was nothing. She was not going to hear about it.
Right.
Two very different ways of approaching it. I would have a hard, but I'm going to work at it. I would have a hard time initially beginning that conversation with my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of obviously family dynamics in there, and every family has them.
Sure.
All good, but just, you know, these conversations can be hard to have. I wish she were here so I could do some of the more kind of like local stuff that you describe.
Mm-hmm.
I'll find a way to do it though with your tutelage.
Okay.
Talk a little bit more about the kinds of decisions that need to be made. There are both, they're medical. They are, your remains.
Right.
As simple mm-hmm. as that. Talk a little bit about the kinds of things that you need that would make sense to have a conversation about. And is there a template? Is there a piece of paper? Is there
sure.
a guide to this?
Well, we have a website, begintheconversation.org, and on that website, there's some different materials, different resources, and one of the things we offer is we call it a toolkit, but it's basically a little booklet of questions that can help you get started. You know, I think really getting started is the hardest thing, and if you have a something in front of you where you could just kind of go through it, I tell people that, you know, it's impossible to talk about everything. You can't imagine every scenario and every thing that can happen to a person. And so you can't, you know, try to cover everything, but stick to the generalities and what are the important concepts and what, like I said, what values do you hold? What beliefs, what's important for your family? You know, what is a tradition that your family has that you want to make sure gets passed on? You talked about the decisions, you know, obviously there are, you know, lots of healthcare kinds of things. You know, the Terry Schiavo case, I'm sure mm-hmm. you know, most of our listeners remember that, you know, was a classic case of right to, you know, to die versus, you know, we want to keep people alive. And it's a very difficult thing to imagine ever happening to a family. But those are the kinds of things that you can talk about. But it's also things like, you know, Alzheimer's and dementia
mm-hmm, yeah.
that once you can't make decisions for yourself healthcare wise and someone else needs to do it, you know, what excuse me, what are the things that you want them to decide? You know, I mentioned, you know, all the legal and financial things that can be put in place. We know of a lot of people who go ahead and write their memorial service and plan their funeral and have that or even pay for those things as well so that financially it's not a burden to their family. Another thing that I love to talk to people about, and that is legacy planning and making sure your family stories get handed down and what you want to be remembered for and what words of wisdom do you want to share with your family that are, you know, maybe not quite as scary as some of those other things that you talk about.
You talked about this earlier as a gift. Have you seen once people get over the hump and start to feel more comfortable having the conversation on either end, either
mm-hmm.
you're the older person who's dealing with his or her own eventual demise,
right.
or you're a family member, once you break through and there's a certain comfort level, Does it really be, is there a lot of appreciation going on around this? I mean, on the part of the whole, everybody in the family, that we can actually talk about this
and
get this done?
You mentioned every family is different and unique. And, you know, but we can say for many of our families, when they are able to talk about it, it does start to tear down some of those walls and some of those barriers. But I also want to make an important point, and that is that it doesn't just have to be an elderly thing. You know, this can actually happen, you know, younger as well. Yeah. And, you know, I have three small children, and, you know, I want to be sure that, you know, what plans I have in place. And so then that can flow then to parents and grandparents and into those folks. So, but yeah, it really can be a comforting, but also give a confidence that, you know, we've already decided these things.
Yes.
And I feel good about that. And I've actually had families tell me that now it's kind of a normal part of their conversation, that when they get together, they can, you know, bring it up because it's already been talked about once. It's that, like I said, getting started is the hardest part.
That's really great to hear, although I don't imagine it happens around the Thanksgiving dinner table all that often.
That is so funny that you said that, because I saw one campaign someplace else in the country, but that was their thing. It was advanced care planning around the Thanksgiving Day table.
Wow.
And that was because it was a time that families are together, and nothing against Thanksgiving, but it's not Christmas, and
right,
it's not, you know, some of these other things. So it was actually, they thought it would be an appropriate time to have the conversation. Because another thing that happens is people maybe talk to one or two people in their family, but don't always include everyone. And so not everyone has the same information, which can cause conflict, you know, when things happen.
What's the future hold begin the conversation?
Well, we're really excited because we have been contacted by some folks around the state who want to make it the North Carolina brand for advanced care planning. So we are looking to take the program statewide and have it be part of healthcare networks and hospitals and local coalition groups who want to get advanced care planning out there. Begin the conversation as the face of it.
So that suggests that begin the conversation actually is more of a local phenomenon at this point.
We created it.
Lower Cape Fear Hospice and Life Care Center created this concept.
Yes, we are the creators of it, you know, and it is virtual. It's a website, but it also, we are creating materials that we can do trainings for the public, but also for providers. And like I said, we want to take it and make it the North Carolina Advanced Care Planning Program.
And I would imagine your colleagues across the state would welcome that.
There's a lot of excitement right now. We are in the midst of getting some promotional materials ready. We're going to actually do a commercial that can be run across the state.
Excellent.
To begin the conversation.
Good
so
idea.
We're really excited about it.
Well, I'm delighted that I could have you on the show so you could talk a little bit about it and get the word out, because it really is a unique program. You got some construction going on over there, don't you?
We do. Over on Physicians Drive here in Wilmington, we are adding beds to our Wilmington Care Center. One of the things that is unfortunate is that there are times when we don't have enough beds and that there's a waiting list for them. And so we were fortunate enough to be approved to add the expansion. And we'll actually have some extra meeting space and some other things that we're putting on there. But we're excited to have the extra resources and space to be able to serve more people.
When will the new facility open?
That's a good question. You know, obviously construction and all of that.
Especially this winter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it should still be completed within the year. And so we're excited about that.
I got to wrap up. You had mentioned that you've got a website. Just run through all of your social network contact points, website, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. We have our hospice website, which is hospiceandlifecarecenter.org. And then we also have the beginTheConversation.org website. So those are two places you can go. We are also doing social media, and for both Lower Cape Fear Hospice as well as Begin the Conversation, you can check out Facebook pages for both, as well as follow us on Twitter for both as well.
Super. And I'm assuming you especially are available for talks in the community.
Definitely. We, like I said, we'll talk to anybody who will listen to us.
Good.
So if you are part of a club or group or family that would like some information about either hospice or advanced care planning, we would be more than happy. You can either go through our website or give us a call.
Lower Cape Fear Hospice, an incredible resource in the general Lower Cape Fear region. We're delighted to have you on board the show. Wish you luck with the program. Love the fact that it's going statewide. Hopefully it'll go national as well. Thanks for joining us, Jason.
Thank you for having me here.